in other news, I typed in that number that rang me.
Oh yeah.
And do you know what shows up? Dublin City Council.
Ooh. Do you need a visa to
Live here? Is this a Cork thing?
It is a Cork thing. Yeah.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Virgin Media. Enjoy an unbeatable lineup of live football and golf with Sky Sports and Sports Extra from Virgin Media.
Chatting about the beautiful game on this panel with the former Republic of Ireland boss Brian Kerr and the League of Ireland winning defender Colin Hawkins, played for Pats, Bohemians and Shells. Brian and Colin, you're both very welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be here.
Good to be here, John, on this auspicious day at the start of the Premier League, and the day is before Oasis today and tomorrow, isn't it? You're asking me, am I gone?
You got your ticket, Brian?
Not yet. I haven't lost hope, John. You know yourself.
Folks out there, Brian Kerr wants to go to Oasis.
And he'd pay.
You're a fan of Oasis? You like them?
I kind of like them, yeah. It wouldn't be, yeah, yeah. But I wouldn't be like paying over the odds to get a ticket now or anything. Yeah. But I know it's such an occasion and sounds great crack. And you know, one of my daughters went to one in Manchester and she said it was absolutely brilliant. And Croke Park is always great to see something different in Croke Park other than Gaelic and hurling, you know. I think to see, even I was there for soccer and I was there for rugby and I enjoyed it, and I was there a few gigs over the years, and I think it's always great to see that beautiful stadium used for other things other than just Gaelic games. And it's a kind of sign of the country changing a bit, and you know, the country being more inclusive and people being less selfish about what they have themselves, that it was opened up. I know at the moment in the country it's becoming a bit less inclusive, unfortunately, with some of the moods around the place in relation to, you know, some of the racial stuff that's going on. But on days like a band with an Irish background who have lived most of their lives in England and one of the world's great bands, and all their history and breaking up and falling out and slagging each other and abusing each other.
That's like the League of Ireland, Brian.
No, there was never as bad as that, I think, but in the League of Ireland as it was between the two brothers. And they've got back together and they're doing these fantastic gigs. So, you know, in such a special place, I think it'd be, I don't know if they can be emotional, but I think that could be even a bit emotional for them, you know.
It's a homecoming.
From Mayo background, and, you know, a lot of Mayo people will probably go there.
Are you going to go, Colin?
I'm lucky enough, yeah. A good friend, shout out for Maura McLaughlin, a friend of my wife. She got us tickets a couple of months back, so looking forward to it. And my son and daughter actually got lucky as well. They got tickets, so I went to see them years ago when I was in England at the time at Coventry, went to the main road gig. So that was unbelievable. So to be able to go back to them in Croke Park, looking forward to tomorrow, yeah, should be great.
Enjoy yourself. You know, Brian, a long time. I'm thinking to Malaysia, what, 1997? We're third in the world, under 20s.
Yeah, 97 again. We must be due a reunion again, Brian. The 30th one is coming up. You did a great job for us for the 25th, so a bit of pressure now for the 30th.
Well, look at John. I won't be too humble about this. These were, you know, it was certainly one of the biggest achievements ever in Irish football, what that team did. I didn't know them very well. I'd only come into the job and I inherited the fact that they had qualified for the World Cup. But there was also 8 months of other players who were eligible to play at it because UEFA and FIFA worked off a different age group. So it was a tricky job for me to put that squad together. But what they achieved in getting toward the World Cup, and when I meet them and when I talk to them, I always remind them of that they're the only Irish team in history who've got a medal at the World Cup in football. And they may well be the only team ever. I would hope someone beats it and at senior level or under 17 level, that sometime an Irish team will do it. But it's hard to see it happening at the moment the way football has developed, both in here and the rest of the world. Unfortunately, we've gone downwards, and majority of countries around the world have moved on. But that was a remarkable achievement of a team of players who didn't hit the greatest heights afterwards. A lot of them had very, very steady careers, like Colin had in the League of Ireland, and Trevor Malloy and Alan Kirby and Neil Fenn and Mikey Cummins played hundreds of games at lower level in England, not in the Premier League. Dave Worrell had a good career, played with Plymouth, played in the Championship with Plymouth. A standout one was obviously Damien Duff. Niall Inman batted around in the lower divisions as well. Glenn Crowe, great career here in the League of Ireland. Trevor, as I mentioned. Who else? Robbie Ryan. Robbie Ryan, a very good career.
Played
in the Cup Final. Oco played with Huddersfield for a while. You know, there were some of them, but didn't do great. Dave Whittle battered around in the League of Ireland a bit after QPR. Aidan Lynch, UCD, good career. But you know, what they achieved as a team in that competition, Dave Worrell and Colin as the centre-backs were the core of the team. Thomas Morgan as the captain in the middle of the field, great League of Ireland career. The spine of the team, Neil Fenn through the middle with Trevor at times, depending on how we played. Mickey Cummins at right-back, Robbie Ryan at left-back. And we played great football. We played seven games in phenomenal conditions from our point of view. The heat and the humidity were extraordinary. But we played great football. We scored some brilliant goals. We were on the back foot a bit in a few matches. Mm-hmm. But in general, so Colin was such a key man in that centre-back. Calm. He was a mixture of the modern and old style centre-half, is what I'd say. He won the battles, he won the headers, he won the duels, as they're called now. But when he had the ball at his feet, he started to play. Himself and Dave Worrell were very comfortable on the ball. Dave isn't particularly big for the... He's not huge for a centre-back. But they started to play from there and played through Thomas in the middle of the field. Thomas Morgan was... What would you describe him as now? He's a number six.
Six. Yeah, brilliant on the ball. Could do everything.
Yeah, and Thomas linked the play and went from there. Get it out to Damien in the wide position. Alan Kirby, Neumann, whoever played in the wide positions. The front players, it was Glenn was in the team. Hold her up, Neil Fenn. Get us into the game. Get us up the pitch. But when we hit the ging it a bit, we would as well too. He could, when I say ging it, play an acrobat pass straight to front man. And then he came back and had a great career around the League of Ireland. He's been going through it. But a few battles lately, he might talk about that himself, but he was a brilliant player, brilliant League of Ireland player, had another go in England. You might talk about that yourself, Doncaster, and come back again. And smashing player, great memories, still all good friends. And when we have a reunion, Johnny Bourne's even turned up day after his dad died, the last one, we got all 18 players together. Last time, after 25 years, the last time they were together was on an open-top bus coming down O'Connell Street the day after we came home. But I think one or two of them got off the flight in England and we only had 16.
That's right.
But we got all 18 together after 25 years. Amazing. And it was like, honestly, John, it was like we were only coming home from Malaysia after the achievement. They were all such good friends, such great respect for each other as a group. Paul Whedon, I didn't mention, the goalkeeper who was brilliant when he was called into action. Derek Oko was sick. He was sick for one match. He was nearly dying from food poison. And he also got put off in the match for delaying the kick out, which was absolutely ridiculous. And Paul was brilliant when he played. He was a bit younger than the rest of the group. But anyway.
So great adventure to start your career, Colin.
Yeah, absolutely. And it came at a tough time for myself, the likes of myself, Thomas Morgan. I always look back. There was probably lads, Richard Dunn, Robbie Keane, Ian Hart. There was a few of the lads who were doing really well in the UK at the time. Probably should have gone in the squad. And for one reason or another, they pulled out for injuries or whatever reasons. And that gave fellas like myself and Thomas who were, you know, we were at a bad spell. We'd just been released. I'd been released by Coventry by Gordon Strachan. Thomas had come home from Blackburn. So this for Brian to show his faith in us, how we did so well was just down to the team spirit of that group. It was an incredible group, and it's no surprise that we've kept together, kept in contact. We're on a WhatsApp group. There's messages going on it every couple of days, like a bit of crack all the time. So it was what Noel and Brian did with us the month or two leading up to the tournament before we evened it out, the preparation down in Limerick, getting ready for the heat and humidity, all that kind of stuff, wearing bloody jackets, rain jackets in the saunas. We thought these guys are crazy, but like we got the benefits later on. And fellas had the holidays booked in. Brian always said from day one, you're there for the duration, you're there till the final. We just came up short 1-0 against Argentina.
Who won it?
Argentina won it, yeah. Argentina beat Uruguay, that's right, yeah.
And then they had Raquel May, they had Aymar, they had Lionel Scaloni, the World Cup manager.
Yeah, so. Romeo was the bloke that scored the goal. He was already playing in the Italian, in the top division, scoring goals. But the thing on that one where he said that they'd holidays booked, I had sent them all individual letters before we went away saying nobody was to book holidays until after the final because they intended us being there for the final, right? And I thought one time I made that up, but I didn't. I actually found the original copy that I put together. So I remember when we were beaten in the semi-final, we were a bit sad about it, and we knew we were going to play Ghana in the third place playoff, and our second time to play Ghana. They beat us in the first game, wasn't it? We played Ghana. They were the African champions. Anyway, we were playing, and I remember saying to them, look, I told you it's not the book your holidays, and I told you we'd be here for the final. Unfortunately, we're not in it, but we're going to be playing before the final, and that's the second best thing. We're playing for a medal. And, you know, we all had a great laugh about it. And some lads, there was scurrying going on about holidays.
Well, to have the medal, as Brian said, like we do recognise that there might not ever happen again. So we do treasure that medal. And the fact that we won the third and fourth place playoff was massive to come home with that medal, you know. So, and the celebrations went on for ages when we came back. Still going on.
And then you were playing Celtic within a year, was it, for Pats?
Yeah, so then the decision was, I did have a few offers on the back of doing well with Brian. There was offers from Forest and Tranmere. I actually played with John Aldridge with Tranmere. They were over here in the pre-season, so I played a couple of games. But that was the opportunity. Pat Dolan had flown over to Malaysia to talk to Trevor Molloy. Obviously, had spoke to Brian about the whole St. Pat's.
Well, he didn't actually, Pat. It was all his own bat. I was too busy. Once I went into that job in 97... I was ferocious busy and I didn't get involved. I was gone out of Pats and I was determined to leave it to them. And I didn't, you know, have any conversation. Pat made his own mind up to get out to Malaysia and he got there. And the benefits of that was he was able to see how you were performing. I think he only arrived for the semi-final, did he?
Yeah.
I think he did. He arrived with a plastic bag with a spare shirt in it and that was his luggage, I think. But he... So that gave him a bit of an advantage because he did know that. I don't know, he signed you and Thomas.
Thomas, yeah. Trevor, he was obviously over to talk to Trevor, I think. And then
Trevor was at Athlone.
Yeah, yeah.
Trevor came through a trial system I had.
And he wanted to make sure he nailed Trevor down. And then he started talking to others like myself and Thomas. And then, yeah, it was the first opportunity to play full-time football in Ireland. And we were going to train in the mornings, do everything correctly. So that was, I was trying to weigh up. I'd obviously been hurt by the experience in England. I had all my family back here in Galway, a lot of them in Dublin. So it's one of probably the best decisions I ever made, going to Pats for them 3 years, picking up two league titles and all the European football that came with it. So
and Henrik Larsson, did you?
Yeah, magic, yeah. That game in Celtic, they'd just done up Celtic Park, so there was like, I think there was close on between 60,000, 70,000. So it was a huge, huge atmosphere for us to go into as underdogs and drew the game nil all. There was a recent clip, Martin Riley, brilliant chance right at the end. To win it, should have scored really, and Martin will admit that, and we could have brought a 1-0. The disappointing thing then, you don't get to play in Richmond because of the rules or whatever around the ground, so it goes to Talca. You come out and it's like an away game against Celtic with the amount of Celtic fans there, but beaten 2-0. But again, and then a couple of weeks then we the Lansdowne tournament, you're playing against Liverpool, Leeds, Lazio, they're all over. So it was a great couple of weeks in like it was only 19 or 20, so it was great memories, you know, them few weeks on the back of Malaysia.
We're chatting to Colin Hawkins and Brian Kerr about football. So you did get a second bite of the cherry in England. You went to what, Coventry again and Brighton? And
yeah, the interesting one I suppose was, I always tell young players, and I'm heavily involved up at St. Mochta's in Clonsilla as the director of football. We've 40 teams up there. So you get chatting to young lads about their careers and dealing with disappointments and stuff like that. But I was released by Coventry, by Gordon Strachan. They were Premier League, if you like, at the time. So there was a lot of centre-halves ahead of me. I was probably the eighth or ninth centre-half. Got released, came home with your tail between your legs. But then it was exactly 10 years after that, I was playing at Shelburne. We'd won the league and it was well documented. The whole team split up for financial reasons. So we all went everywhere. Sean Dillon went to Dundee. Eamon Collins was looking after me at the time, got a phone call and there's a club in for you. I was actually on my honeymoon at the time. Stephen Kenny was ringing me, my hotel room. My wife will always tell me, looking for me to go to, he had gone over to Scotland. Pat Fenlon had gone up to Derry. So there's a few of them looking for me to sign. But Eamon said, there's a club in for you in England. You have to go over. There's a 3-day trial. If you do well, there's a place in their championship starting team. So that was it. I said, who is it? Coventry. Couldn't believe it. Like 10 years later, literally drove into the same training ground where I'd lived, same tea ladies and all the people that looked after me. So it's kind of a story that, listen, never give up. I came home really disappointed, but then 10 years later I went in, made sure the 3 days, having had 6 weeks off and wedding and honeymoon and all that kind of crazy stuff, made the most of the 3 days and got a contract, played on the Monday night against Luton and we won. We were down around 18th in the table, but went on a brilliant run, beating Wolves, Southampton. I remember they were all championship clubs at the time. So I'd come from League of Ireland. I was like, I've arrived. You know, so it was a great experience just to go back and play in the championship, you know.
And then you ended up at Brighton for a time and look where they are now.
Yeah, after that, yeah. I went there. They were a League One club, obviously playing at the Whitdean Stadium, but I knew all the plans for them to push on and kick on. And the new stadium was being built. Tony Bloom had just gone into the club. Gus Poyet came in as the manager. I was invited back to do that summer. I'd ruptured my Achilles. I had an awful bad Achilles injury. He'd invited me back as he came in as the manager. And we just made the decision. Elaine, we'd had two kids at that point to come home. And there was an offer from Liam Buckley, who we had good times with the Pats at Sporting Fingal. And again, European football, all this kind of stuff. I was thinking, right, opportunity to come back and play in Europe at the ages around 30, I suppose, at that point. So no regrets. You look back on all decisions you make at different points in your career, but lots of ups and downs.
Where did I mention Doncaster? Was that the head?
That's when I left Pats, yeah. The first time.
It seems harder now, doesn't it? Because the Premier League is so global for Irish players too. There's not going to be many involved. There'd be, what, Kelleher and Collins at Brentford, Jacob Ryan at Everton, Matt Doherty at Wolves, maybe Seamus Coleman at Everton, but not many.
No, maybe Andy Morden be still at Brighton? Will he get a go at all this season? But that's about it. It's about five, and you're looking at, you know, Matt Doherty.
Josh Cullen, obviously, at Burnley.
With Josh Cullen as captain of Burnley, and that's it. And with lots of players playing in the Championship. But, you know, if you go back, like, when I was managing the youth teams and managing the senior team, well, I could go to matches. I remember one day, sounds a bit mad to say it now, but I was sitting beside Sven Eriksson, right? Manager of England. And it was a morning kickoff at Liverpool, Manchester United and Liverpool. Liverpool, Manchester United. And I was sitting beside him. And he said to me, you have an interest here today, which I thought was a bit strange to ask me. Why would they be going to match with no interest in? I said, yeah. I said, and I thought it was really strange he didn't understand the Irish players of playing. I said, the number 16, I said, he's one of ours, you know, Roy Keane. Oh, yes, he said. And I said, and for the other team, I said, John O'Shea. I said, also, he's one of theirs. And I said, number 2, Steve Finnan. I said, oh, yes. He said, I'm kind of baffled that he doesn't know these players. Like, there's only about 400 players in the Premier League. He's been there for a few years. They're not like you confuse them, like, is he from Nigeria or Mali or Cameroon? You know, they're like, and they were fairly well known fellas. I just couldn't believe he wasn't way on top. But, you know, I could go to that, but then I could go to, say, Spurs, Manchester United, and it'd be Roy and John O'Shea maybe in the middle of the field, and Stephen Carr and Robbie is playing, and Gary Doherty might be playing, Andy Reid might be playing. We might have 6 or 7 in a match, in a Premier League match, not far from the top of the table. And, you know, and people say, why didn't you do better when you had the team? I didn't do too bad either with the players. But, you know, we could be going to Everton, and Kevin be playing, and, you know, we'd pick the match depending on who they were playing against, because there might be 2 or 3 in the other match. Now they don't have that, you know, the current manager doesn't have that. You can go to the Championship matches and you see a good few players. If he goes to West Brom and where have we got?
Ipswich, Southampton, Bristol City.
Ipswich last week was good. Ipswich and Southampton.
Smolik and Ogbeni fit again.
Yeah, and they went off in the game. There O'Shea playing and so on. But, you know, it's a bit different.
Yeah. Going to get better?
You'd like to think so. I mean, everyone pins their hopes on. You talk about Mason Mealy, obviously signing for Spurs is a huge one. He's gone over there a lot more prepared. It's going to be really difficult for him to break into that first team squad. Like, there's a brand new manager there that he had nothing got to do with his transfers. You know what I mean? When he gets there, Thomas Frank wouldn't. He's only getting to know him now. I'm sure he's looking at clips of him. But having said that, been really impressed with everything I've seen from Mason Mealy, but he's only a young kid going over there. And then young Noonan at Rovers is the one everyone talks about, where he ends up. But really difficult, yeah, to break into that Premier League. They're looking for a different type of player. They're bringing in athletes, I see, and turning them into footballers more.
See, John, when I was going watching players for the youth team in that period, 97, 98, 99, around that time, like Damien Duff, who we haven't really talked about because he was part of the Malaysian team, but Damien was playing the first team at Blackburn. I first went to see him in a youth cup match, and there was a buzz on the ground when he got the ball. It was a good crowd at the youth cup game because he was playing. But he was playing the first team. Robbie was playing the first team at Wolves. Barry Quinn was the captain of the team that won in Cyprus. He was playing the first team at Coventry, but Coventry were in the Premier League at the time. And Barry Quinn was playing. Thomas Heary was playing regular at Huddersfield in the Championship. So many of them. Liam George was playing regular at Luton, who were fairly. Luton might have been Division 3 at that time, maybe lower Championship. Gary Doherty, the same, he was at Luton. But the players were playing the first team, who was picking for the youth international team. People used to be a bit of giving out that you're not picking so and so out of the League of Ireland. I'm going, but I can pick players that are playing the first team in England. They're not just youth team players. Now we don't have that. So we don't, no. You know, compared to that. So we don't, you know, we're hoping lads are going to get through at 21, 22 into the first team. Then they were good enough and they'd come through the system. And that's where the problem is now. I mean, you know, players went when they were 15, 16, they went to England and they were full time and they were coming through the system and they were exceptionally good into the first team. Now they're not going until they're 18. And
because of Brexit,
and if they're very good, very, very good, some of them have broken into the first team in the League of Ireland. Not that many of them, but some of them have. But they're missing out on that two to three years of full time intensive training and lifestyle and competitiveness. Some of it was not always good for them. Some lads didn't develop very well, and they suffered the pain of being rejected and coming home. But the better ones survived and broke through at the first team level. Now they're not going, you know, and the dependence is on the League of Ireland clubs to develop them. The schoolboy clubs can do the best they can up to 13, 14. And now they're going into League of Ireland. League of Ireland clubs don't have the resources. That's why they're making such a big deal about the responsibility of the academies. But they do have that responsibility. Our international teams depend on the quality. The quality is not going to be as good if they're not training as often, if they're not in an environment that's as competitive as it should be, if the kids aren't as hungry as maybe they used to be, or the kids are from other areas around the world. And you see where the players are coming from. The best players are coming from South America and Africa, and they're making their way across to Europe and to the Premier League eventually, but lots of leagues around Europe are dependent on those players. They're often the best, most technical players, apart from the ones that are taught and trained in the academy systems around Europe that are there's huge investment in and have culture and have spent time on it. Like, say, the Netherlands, for instance. They've been at it for years, but a lot of the smaller countries now, Montenegro, Croatia, we see them coming up, you know, with new players, technical players. And we're falling behind on that because of our system. Mm-hmm. Would you?
No, 100%.
Is that fair?
Like, obviously, with the Brexit thing has kept them here. And then everyone talks about the government funding. Like, they're trying everything they can, whether it's the Shane Robinsons in the FAI at the moment or the clubs. We have a link with Mockers with Shelburne. I can see there's some really good coaches there. They're trying their best with the academy players they have. But they're, like, the facilities they have are just same facilities I dealt with 30 years ago.
And the contact time isn't frequent. No, because the people that are volunteers are generally...
Be fair to say we don't have an industry for football in Ireland.
And Pat Dolan was saying that 25 years ago, you know, and we're still saying that. It's a very small industry. Many League of Ireland clubs, you know, how many full-time people have they got, full-time coaches? Not many, three or four. Some of the top clubs, say, Shamrock Rovers, Shelbourne maybe in the last couple of years, Pats, Cork, Boas... They still only have three or four full-time people. Even the people working in their underage setup, if they're generally doing various jobs, they're running a team and they're probably doing a bit of commercial stuff or helping the office, and they're not full-time coaches as such. They can't afford that at the moment. And it means the contact time with the players, because the players are in school, three or four times a week. You know, it might be three training sessions, it might be one gym session, it might be one match. But in comparison to what all the other kids around Europe and further afield in the world are getting, it's not enough to develop the players to the quality that's required for us to be competitive, where we're picking from a fairly small base of roughly 5 million people, and they're divided out between a multiplicity of sports. You've got rugby, got a certain percentage of them, not a huge percentage. Certainly the GAA games have a huge number of them. And then, so if each country only produces, I'd say, a certain amount of geniuses, a certain number of geniuses. Those geniuses are divided between those other sports, and you take in, we've had the odd genius in, you know, gymnastics and a few other sports and swimming and so on, that we've got Olympic medals. Of course, the boxers, which are different. They're not maybe ball game merchants, but they could have been, like Katie Taylor. But, you know, so we have to do it better. We have to do it more intensely. We have to have the best coaches with the best young players. We don't have that. We need to be. Yeah, when I was running the underage international teams, we had the best coaches with the best international players at that time. The lads I had around me were the best. But we were getting in players who were already ready for us, because the clubs are developing them in England. We would have included the likes of, you know, Keith Doyle in the team that won, playing at Pats, full-time at Pats at the time. But there was very few players who were good enough in the system here to play at the level we were playing at, which was about beating Spain and Portugal.
So we desperately need state money.
Yeah. Well, it's not going to come from anywhere else.
Yeah.
It might come from, it should come from the gambling money or the lottery money. It should come from something like that, where there's money where people are spending loose money on, you know, say, it's both of them are gambling. The betting and the lottery are both gambling in their own ways. And it's people's, let's say, loose money. But it needs to come from those sort of sources. Given them, what was the figure yesterday on League of Ireland? Nearly 6 million euro was bet on every League of Ireland match. Now, it's not just in Ireland, that's worldwide, on every League of Ireland Premier League match. But how much of it is even bet on each? But that's only one aspect of football. There's massive money around there, and some of it has to go back in. You know, we're drifting back. It's not the fault of the manager, it's not the fault of Hegram or Stephen Kenny or the fellas before them. We're drifting back with the quality of players we have. Maybe we should have had better results with some of the players we had, even back in my own time. But we've got to try and ensure to remain competitive in the future.
You mentioned, John, but not the industry is there. Like, but as you said, the funding needs to happen. And in fairness to the coaches, there's some quality coaches out there that just, there is no role for them. Like, these fellas have gone, put themselves through serious expense, probably themselves, and they've gone under the UEFA Pro license, whether they did them here, the UK or Northern Ireland. I could mention some brilliant coaches here sitting in jobs, and they're absolutely being wasted, because there is no job for them, whether it's in the FAI or in the academies, because they can't afford them. As Brian said, the clubs, like a Shelburne, they can only afford two or three full-time staff. Like, so until that funding comes through, how are these players going to improve? The contact hours, all that kind of stuff that everyone's banging on.
You see those quality coaches you're talking about, they're out and about, and they have spent fortunes in educating themselves on the game, and then they need opportunity, and they can't get opportunity with the FAI. There's not enough roles, there's not a few international teams, and the same manager's been in them for a good few years. And, you know, the clubs are, there's only a certain number of teams, and they're looking for opportunity, and they end up staying in jobs and doing a bit part-time, and they're not really getting paid. They can't, there's no industry, as you said, and those people aren't getting the opportunity to flourish, and, you know, sort of opportunities that I had, luckily. But it was late enough in my life before those opportunities came. And the same for Noel O'Reilly.
The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Virgin Media. Enjoy an unbeatable lineup of live football and golf with Sky Sports and Sports Extra from Virgin Media.